Sandy Copeland will participate remotely in the purchase with AB 2449 using the just cause provision. Sandy, please state the reason you're asking to use the just cause provision.
I'm asking to participate remotely because I was diagnosed with COVID and asked to quarantine for 5 days. So that began on Monday.
Thank you. Is there any person in the room that is age 18 or older? If such person is in the room, you must disclose that and the nature of the relationship.
I was not able to understand you, Janet.
Is there any person in the room under that is 18 or older?
I can get somebody. My wife is in the house.
No. If such a person is in the room, you must disclose that and the nature of the relationship.
No, okay. There's not. No.
The board does not need to vote on a just cause request. So will you take the roll call?
Member Janet Brennan?
Here.
Member Sandy Copeland?
Here.
Member Zane Hatchett? Matthew Mahoney is being adopted. Member Bob Smith?
Here.
Member Thorne?
Here.
Member Alan Schill?
Here.
Member Sandy Swank? Member Winter?
Here.
And Member Zane?
Here.
We have quorum.
Thank you. Are there any changes or additions to the agenda?
No changes, Chair.
Okay.
Why did we need a quorum?
Going back to item three, nominations and elections of 2024 committee chair and vice chair. Are there nominations for the chair?
I'll nominate Janet.
Second.
I'll second that.
And any more nominations for chair? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion carried. Nominations are in order for vice chair.
I'll nominate Alan again.
Are there additional nominations? If not, all those in favor of electing Alan Strew as the vice chair, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Motion carried. Thank you.
Can we do roll call? Yes. Okay.
Yeah, we do.
I'm checking out.
Now is the time for comments from the public on items on the agenda. Are there any public comments?
There were no comments, no public comments. The minute is ready by January 30th at 5 p.m. and there was no public comment today. Yes, sir.
Thank you. The next item is accept and file a summary of actions for the advisory committee meeting of October 5th. Are there any additions or corrections to those minutes? If not, we will accept and file those. Next item is receive a presentation on calendar year 2023 engineering and compliance. Amy?
Good afternoon, everyone. Let me just get this presentation loaded. There we go. Good afternoon. Just want to make sure seeing
Oh, maybe there's one more. Oh, there we go. Hey, good afternoon. I'm just going to do the routine calendar year activity report that we provide to you every year in February. So I'll give you a little brief description of what we're doing in engineering compliance, and then give you a summary of some of the activity data that was in the report with your agenda today. So on the engineering side, engineers evaluate permit applications for compliance with federal, state, and local rules. They issue permits with operating conditions. They may develop rules and regulations as needed, and then they also report annual stationary source emission inventory information to the state. So I'm going to focus today on just talking about our permit process. That's the bulk of the work that the engineers do. This chart is just a summary of the process. So we receive a permit application. It's assigned to an engineer to evaluate, as I mentioned, against all the rules and regulations that may apply. And once they review that, the first step is to issue something called an authority to construct. And that means that the applicant can go ahead and install the equipment that they apply for in the permit. Once that's completed, they'll follow up with the engineer and let them know. The engineer will go out and do an inspection of that equipment, make sure everything matches what they applied for. And if everything looks good, then we'll go ahead and issue that permit to operate. So last year, we received 329 permit applications, and that's pretty similar to what we received in calendar year 2022. We issued 174 authorities to construct and 219 permits to operate, and those numbers were approximately 10% lower than the year before, because we did have one vacant engineer position that we were finally able to refill in September, so we had a vacant position from December 2022 until September 2023. And then this chart just shows the different types of applications that we received. And so the blue pie piece that says 70, we received 70 change of ownership applications. And those happen quite frequently at gas stations. They change ownership. So we get a lot of new types of applications in a year. And then the next two most common types of permit applications were emergency generators, which maybe the weather from yesterday. Fortunately, I don't think anyone lost power, but emergency generators, we're seeing still a lot of those types of permits come in. And then miscellaneous permits, which are things like fume hoods, crushing and screening equipment, solvent handling operation. So once a permit's issued, it's handed off to our compliance team, and they will conduct inspections every year of permitted sources. They make sure that those sources are compliant with their permit conditions. And if needed, they'll issue violations. We also have a separate inspector that addresses the federal inspections regulation, and then we also respond to complaints. So I'll go over just some of these activity categories. So last year, we finally were able to refill all of our inspector positions. And so we did end up with more compliance inspections last year. We had 1,559 inspections. And then those asbestos notifications are received online through our permit database. And those notify us when a project has a regulated amount of asbestos material that's going to be removed. For all those notifications, we do inspections for as many as we can get to. So last year, we were able to do about 200 of those. We have 5 variances issued, and variances are issued through our hearing board. And then we had 22 source tests observed. So we have about 100 permits that require source testing. And so as our inspectors can get out to some of those source tests, they'll go out and field and observe those source tests. So last year we received 254 complaints in this pie chart, so it's a distribution of the complaints. And we continue to see odor and smoke as our two top categories. I will point out that a large portion of the smoke from outdoor fires was a complaint that we received from our planning department for a prescriber in Santa Cruz County. So then finally, this is the chart that shows the 10-year activity levels. And the top blue line is the total number of permits. And so it's been fairly stable. We had about a little fewer than 3,000 in 2013, and now we're slightly above that now. The middle blue line is the number of compliance inspections, and that's really highly variable based on the number inspectors that we have. And so you can see the numbers starting to go back up in 2023 now that we've got our full staff back. And then the bottom three lines are permits issued, complaints, and permit applications. And that can, you can see that's been a stable workload for the past 10 years. So we do need to have all of our staff to address all of those types of activities that we need. So with that, I'll take any questions.
Questions? I have a brief one.
Sure.
Why are there more applications than permits? A lot more applications than authority to construct permits.
Sure. So when an authority to construct is issued from an application, it can take, it's allowed to exist for 2 years. So sometimes we'll get an permit application and maybe it was too advanced when they were ready to install something. And so it might take a couple of years before they do it. We have a rule though that does say an ATC can only last for no more than 7 years. So we, in some cases, have to, if there's a timeline, if you're not gonna install it in 7 years, then you don't have to start over. So there, it's not a one-to-one matchup.
Yeah. You indicated by adding a staff member, you were able to get more work done. Do you have enough staff, or have you have the staffing level now matched the work evenly? Or
so actually, in our budget for our engineering team, we are going to propose one new position for an air quality technician to help us with reporting to the state on the annual emission inventory. They've expanded the requirements of what we need to report. So we're hoping in the next fiscal year, we'd be adding another position in engineering.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you. So we are on to item eight, or?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, we're setting up, I'll just let you know that that is not a public member on our screen. Matt Bard is a virtual employee, actually an AI employee in the district, so he doesn't really exist. But he's who's a placeholder on our Zoom calls and on our LinkedIn page too.
And why is that?
Typically, we don't like to assign personal names to accounts because, especially on LinkedIn, they can have access to their public information. So nobody can get at Matt Bard. He doesn't exist.
Okay.
So there's no person behind the name?
It's probably Siri. She came up with his name. But he's got his own account and everything. He probably has his own credit cards. Private chat.
Cool name. You have to claim it.
So you guys, hopefully it's not lost on you, Matt Bard, M Bard.
Okay.
Yeah. That's hilarious. He's a minstrel.
All right. Excuse me, one second. For item number six, do we have to accept the presentation and you will call? It says receive.
No. Okay. Right. My name is David Prisby. I'm planning an air monitoring manager here at the air district. I'm going to be the annual report for 2023 for activities. So what planning does is we review CEPA documents, we administer grant programs.
Do you want to put it in?
I tried, it didn't seem to come on. Let's see if I can try it again. There it is. Okay. So we administer grant programs, the smoke management program to reduce impact smoke from open burning. We do public outreach of our programs, and we do many special projects. Last year, we reviewed 8 CEQA documents. Both negative declarations and account impact reports. Our grant programs, yes, we have several grant programs that are funded from different funds. We've got 8.76 for transportation grant programs, our Warner program, which is for repowering of diesel equipment, a farm program for agricultural equipment replacements, community air protection program, and we DMVPs for Assembly Bill 923, which we use for zero emission school bus program and our electric vehicle infrastructure installation programs. For our transportation projects last year, we had 11 projects completed, a total of $3 million, some off the chain and some chain. These are all transportation related projects that are for reducing emissions from mobile sources. An example of a project we did last year that was completed was the City of Salinas fleet electrification. They replaced three of their work trucks with two box trucks and one flatbed electric vehicle. These were all based on a Ford medium-duty truck frame and electrified in that, that frame, that Ford frame. 827-66 funds also are funding the electric vehicle incentive program. We have had 166 projects completed with $342,004 expended. The full grants were for new battery electric vehicles. So really getting out there with the all electric vehicles. You can see here just this couple of testimonies from people who are really pleased with the program because they would not have been able to get into an electric vehicle otherwise. So they it's really helped a lot of people to go electric that couldn't otherwise do that. Our electric bicycle incentive program started the year July with $50,000 from the 827-66 fund. It was a $500 incentive for low-income applicants. We had a very slow start. There wasn't a whole lot of interest. In December, we went back to the board, and they authorized us opening it to all incomes. And the incentive amount increased to $750. So by the end of 2023, we only had $4,500 obligated. With 9 applications. Now, a month later, we're about to close the program any day now. So probably by the end of tomorrow, we'll be closing the program because the funds have been extended. So Assembly Bill 923 fund is $2 per registered vehicle that we that the DMV collects and forwards to Edmar. we use those funds to meet the required match funding for our Carl Hoyer program that the state requires. So we match some funds for that program. We also use the funds in past years for the zero emission school bus program, where we provide electric buses to school districts around the region, as well as our Plug in Monterey Bay program, where we fund electric vehicle infrastructure in the region. The funds were drawn down in prior years, and we had supply chain issues on buses. So the program was on standby in 2020. We will be relaunching both the Plug in Monterey Bay and the zero emission school bus program next year. We were using some of the funds for the Carl Hoyer program, as required by the Carl Hoyer grant program. This is just an example of our first bus that was delivered zero emission school bus to someone in the school several years ago program. You see the blue bumper and the blue wheels, even though it's electric. That's a E-line bus. This is another project that was funded at Croomdale Shopping Center several years ago with 8923 funds. It's an electric vehicle charging station. It's a pretty fast station, 200 kilowatts per hour. And then this is the station down at the Camp Roberts rest area that we're funded through the program as well.
100%
solar. 100% solar, yeah. The Carmel Memorial Grant Program, that's funds that we received from California for replacing or repowering. It's mostly replacing old tractors with new cleaner burning tractors. So we completed 9 projects last year. Total grants were $773,000. Oh, we've seen your reports, a table of the projected grant amounts. I've updated from this presentation for you the actual grant amounts. So this is an example of a project that was completed last year. The Alameda Company, San Benito County. You can see at the left, the old tractor. That's the baseline. And then once we enter into agreement, we have that hauled out to A&S Metals in Castroville, where they use the brontosaurus to come down and crush it. Big scissors that crushes the tractor so it can never be used again. And then we pay for up, the program pays for up to 50% of the tractor. So that's the and John Deere tractor they received on the right. The Farmer Grant Program is very similar to Moyer. It's for specifically 2 agricultural projects. So last year we completed 12 projects for about $1 million, $1 million. Again, this table here is an updated table from what you have in the report. The one report is the potential grant amounts. This is the actual grant amounts that we have funded. And so this is a project from Farmer Program, Industrial Management, had this old tractor, old dirty tractor, and then had it hauled out to A&S Metals. It was destroyed, and they received this beautiful case.
To Crowder?
Yeah.
Just to get a scale on this. Do you have any kind of count on probably how many tractors there are in the county and what percentage have been converted?
There was a survey done a number of years ago that was done by Cal Poly along with the state. And the so there's a count. I don't have that for you right now. But I can I could bring back a count of all the tractors that have been replaced over the past 25 years for the programs that we have.
Well, ballpark of the total, if you have it in your head, I don't know if you do. But
I don't have my head.
That's fine.
Yeah.
That'd be nice number 12. I know.
We've been doing a lot more tractors in the years because we try to get the lowest cost per ton of emissions. So we rank the projects by how cost effective the project's going to be.
Mm.
So we'd rather pay $5,000 per ton of emission reductions rather than the maximum amount, which is $34,000 per year or per ton. So because we've done that, and then we've also reduced the amount to 50% of the cost of the tractor. So we've been able to spread out more of the funding to more projects.
Mm.
So we're actually doing a lot more projects and a lot more replacements than we have in prior years. So.
Just to add that, the farmer award is proportional to the need. So the survey helped inform how much money we were going to get. So I don't recall how many tractors we had to replace or that need to be replaced. But let's just say we're about, behind certainly San Joaquin, which has got tons more than us. And then there's a few other very agricultural intensive districts that from Yolo, Solano, Ventura, Santa Barbara, that have a need as well. So do you recall what our award was for farmer?
Last year it was around $2 million.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just wondering how tall a hill you had to climb.
That survey showed that we were third in the state for number of tractors behind San Joaquin and South Coast, that we were about 3% of total tractors in the state. So moving forward, the Community Air Protection Program, which is an additional fund that we received from the Air Resource Board. We completed two projects last year. Those are directed specifically to disadvantaged communities in low-income areas in the region. So we completed two projects last year. And our wood smoke reduction program, we were allocated by the end of last, by December, we were allocated $609,000 for our stove reduction program. Change out program, which is unprecedented amount of money for the program. We spent last year updating and relaunching it. We relaunched it on December 14th. This program no longer allows the replacement of old wood stoves with natural gas or propane units. So as you can see here on the left side of the screen, there's an old fireplace sensor wood burning, and it was it was replaced with a wood burning insert. So this is the type of project that we do with this program. We launched our landscape equipment exchange program this past year. By the end of the year, we spent a long time developing it. It was very complicated and. And so launching it was a big effort. We received $360,000 from the Carl Moyer program, State Reserve. So it's an extra fund that's set aside from the Carl Moyer program for specific projects. In this case, it was for a commercial program to replace old lawn and garden equipment from commercial operators for all electric. Cordless equipment. So we're offering $15,000 for replacement of commercial equipment. We've also established a residential program, so replacement of lawnmowers for some gas powered lawnmowers for all electric models. So we took $80,000 from that program and put it into the landscape equipment program. The planning division gets involved in a lot of outreach and education to promote our programs. For our use ownership equipment replacement program, we have to get the word out and let people know that that's available. Everyone's getting hit pretty hard with a lot of information these days. And if we don't spend some time and energy trying to get the word out to people, then our program won't be successful. So we really work hard to get the programs promoted. We also get involved with community events. This past year in October, we were part of the EVs for Everyone ride events in Salinas to promote the electric vehicle incentive program and electric bicycle incentive programs. We also get involved in Earth Day. And we do a lot of outreach on media, social media, website. And this past couple of years, we've been expanding to Spanish language stations and media. Division also is called the Smoke Management Program. So, this is for large scale, ordering, small, independent backyard type projects. We have an online permitting system for the backyard permits. The smoke management program for tri-bar managers to develop smoke management permits. We don't need a lot of forecasting for the fire, so there's less impact on the community. We did receive a grant for $184,000 from California to implement the program. This helps us to avoid charging fees or permit fees for open burning or prescribed burning. So because we do get grants, we don't have to request funding for permits. Last year, permitted 164 agricultural burns, 1,743 backyard burns. For prescribed burning, we issued 27 permits, 16,000 acres of land, only 6,207 acres were burned, and for a total of 22,567 tons of PM10 emissions. We also get involved in these special projects. We grew the Santa Rosa Valley, became a 2.5 emissions reduction, where we tried to launch a Spare the Air program during the winter months to help people be aware of the conditions where there's been concentrated smoke from using wood burning stoves and fireplaces. We do air quality forecasting to project out the potential concentrations of smoke in the region or other pollutants in the region. Post that forecast on the page. After we got involved with Blue Whales and Blue Skies Initiative, we'll work with other coastal air districts and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration to help reduce large shipping speeds so that they won't impact whales and also reduce emissions from shipping. And then this past year, we implemented the Clean Air Centers program, where we received a grant from CAR, through the California Air Pollution Control Officers Association, to establish clean air centers for relief from wildfire smoke to the public. We're implementing that program with Reed, California. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Question? I have a couple. Since the district is attainment for the ozone standard, has the handbook, CEQA guidelines handbook, been updated to reflect that?
No, CEQA handbook is still from 2008.
Excuse me?
It's still from 2008.
Because it's really out of date. I mean, consistency is no longer a requirement. And my other question relates to the CAP program. You funded a tractor replacement and an electric bus, and these emission reductions are intended to address disadvantaged communities.
The projects are to be implemented in disadvantaged communities.
Merrill Farms is, where's the disadvantaged community for Merrill Farms?
So the disadvantaged communities are identified in a map that CARB has published for determining where the disadvantaged communities and low-income areas are, and they're based on the EnviroScreen 4.0 map. And they're done by census tract. So there might be a census tract that has impacts from pesticides, water quality, language barriers, language isolation, socioeconomic issues. There's a whole range of ways that disadvantagedness is determined. And air quality is just a couple of those factors within that to determine that how something is disadvantaged, an area is disadvantaged. But census tracts are based on not necessarily an area that is just a way for the census to count people. And so it might be expanding into agricultural areas. And so you'll have a portion of the neighborhood that might be connected to an agricultural area where it'll all be considered a disadvantaged area.
Well, Merrill Farms is largely adjacent to Toro Park. That's why I asked the question.
And they have a lot of ranches.
They have a lot of ranches.
You'd be surprised. They're all over the county. So,
okay.
And some of them come with housing complexes.
That answers the question.
I had a question. After you make the grants, do you have any kind of program for retrospectively going back and surveying the grantees, satisfaction type survey, comparison surveys with internal combustion engines that they used to use, and how they, do they like them? And is there really a cost advantage in that sort of thing?
We haven't done any of that kind of surveys. Usually when we are going following up with a post inspection where we see we evaluate the final delivery of the tractor, the ranchers are usually dancing, super happy, and pretty stoked on getting the tractor. So I think it's fair to say that they're pleased with it.
But we do an inspection, and we keep they're supposed to give us record and keep record keeping and reporting requirements, and then we do a final inspection because typically their last lifetime is 3 to 5 years. So we could do that. To be honest, we don't get a lot of money for administration of the program, and what you're talking about is administration. So we try to do what's required by CARB to, you know, what's listed, the strings that are attached, and we don't go that far beyond it. But that's something we look into because that would be meaningful data.
Yeah, and probably would depend on the demand you have too, I would think. I mean, if you've got more people pounding at your doors to get grants than you have grant money, then there's not a long-term incentive to do that possibly, other than academically, it would be nice to have that information, but it would be a great seller if you had to sell the programs.
We don't really have to sell those programs. There's a lot of interest. We usually have more applications than we have funding.
In fact, one of the things we've done is we've tried to maximize the number of grants that we're giving. So that means lowering the grant incentive amount to each individual. So, but what that did is it went from, you know, you could spend most of the money on a couple of tractors and be done. The administrative costs are pretty small. But we ended up putting a low cap on that. So we ended up having a lot more grants to administer. But we think it's better because we're getting more impact on the emission reduction. So it's a sweet spot. We played around with numbers on our incentive program for electric vehicles, for instance, trying to see what the public will tolerate. So we're still figuring it out, but I think we're getting close, and David is staffed up to be able to handle. We're now grant processors. We're not really planners that much anymore. So, but that may change because of the state's budget crisis. Totally cut our
funds. Yeah.
So we could go back to normal.
Yeah. Any other questions? If not, a motion's in order to accept the report.
So moved.
Is there a second to accept the report? It's been moved and seconded to accept the report. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion carried. Thank you. Next item is the air monitoring division annual report.
While Sean's getting that, I just also say under our clean air centers, I've managed to secure, at least I hope, I have a $75,000 face mask and 95 masks for use during wildfire. And I'm going to look at Kara.
Yeah, I haven't gotten the update on the tracking for the delivery, but I'll check it again today.
Okay, so they should be showing up free of charge. So that's, I was looking at buying them for 50 cents a piece, which would be in the 30s of thousands of dollars. And it's called the N95 Project, which was started a nonprofit for COVID. And they're winding down now, so they're trying to get rid of all their excess inventory. And they called me up and said, you can take as many as 200,000 if you'd like. And I just wasn't sure how much space it was going to require, so I took 75. We'll be distributing them to emergency service organizations in California, other local community service groups, as well as any other agencies that they want. So maybe we'll have a stack in here for you guys next time.
Right. Sean, you're on.
Yeah, right, great. That's what it looks like, yeah. Zoom got Buddha's office. Like, you know.
And while we're getting booted, now let's mention that this whole system is getting changed out. We've signed a buffer agreement with AMPEG, and we're going in together on a whole new audio visual system. So we'll have 100-inch monitors These are 83, I think. And we're on new sound system and cameras and so forth. So it should be a lot easier. And there's a brain, like an AI system that supposedly anybody out on the street can operate this and not a bunch of technical.
Matt,
yeah, we might have to employ Matt.
Yeah, I think Matt's hard and it's taking a break right now. He's kicking his off.
I hope you remember how these PowerPoint presentations work perfectly before the meeting. And then you remember the meeting.
I think my board really ticked off. Like, this always happens. And it was the day we were trying to get approval for the new AV system. I said, well, case in point, this is why we're trying to upgrade.
Right.
But we'll probably have problems with the new system too.
Sure.
You need books, Amy?
No, I just have to. Okay. It's just, I don't know if it lost internet connection because it's kind of slow.
Yeah, there's no internet. Oh, you lost internet?
I see. Mm-hmm.
And he's still on.
David, do you want to go around and get into this?
Yeah.
Tell him there's no internet.
This got, it's, yeah.
The internet kind of died.
This one, yeah.
It was my report.
Hmm. Okay. While we're, you want to share it from that one? Do you have any of that? Okay.
See if you can share it.
Keeping things interesting here for everybody. So, hey, I'm Sean with your monitoring and I'm the supervisor here at MBAR. Talk about the year 2023 air monitoring information on measured air quality concentrations in Monterey, Santa Cruz, and San Diego counties. Also, talk about air quality trends here in 2024. So what does the air monitoring division do? Well, we operate and maintain a network of air monitoring equipment to determine compliance with the state and federal ambient air quality standards. And we are located in North Central Coast Air Base. That's kind of our area. To do this, we need air monitoring equipment. It's sophisticated equipment, computerized. When I took this job 7 months ago, I didn't really realize how complex these instruments were. We have great MR staff that knows how this stuff works and keep it working and ensure the integrity of the data gets to the state and the federal department. So EPA and CARB have adopted air quality standards of criteria pollutants. This is based on medical and scientific journals, as well as secondary factors on human welfare. There are six criteria pollutants that are a big concern out there, but in bar, we have our concerns are ozone, PM10, PM2.5. So we have 8 monitoring stations in our district. 6 of our stations, we grab data for ozone. That includes Pinnacles National Parks, and that station is run by federal parks. 6 stations, we get data for PM2.5, and 3 stations we obtain data for PM10. So an example of a couple of our stations here, these enclosures, the equipment is inside the enclosure, sampling things are up on top there. That's King City on the right and Carmel Valley on the left. So we're going to go over to the data right now. As Janet has mentioned, we are in attainment for ozone, which is a good thing for this year. So here's the state standard. Right there is that line, 90 parts per billion. So for the 3 counties there, for the 1 hour average, we're within the standard. So that's great news there. So this is the daily 8 hour peak of ozone, the 3 counties there. And it's the state and federal standard, 70 parts per billion. We are within that standard as well. So that's great news again for that stuff. And you know, besides ozone being harmful to human health, you know, lung capacity and all that stuff, the secondary factors with this is, especially in our areas, agricultural operation. Ozone can do significant crop damage and crop yield. So what we wanted to do is kind of present like a 10-year trend to see what air quality has been doing here in the last 10 years. So we took the maximum 24-hour average, or the 1 hour and the 8 hour average of each year for ozone there. So as you can see, kind of it's trending downward since, you know, 2023. You see those peaks, 2016, 2018, and 2020. Those are regional impacts from wildfire smoke. So there's a correlation between wildfire smoke and ozone. Yeah, 2023 PM10 24-hour concentrations. So the state standard is 50 micrograms per cubic meter. So we had 13 exceedances in 2023. So let me explain these spikes right here. So the light green ones, as you can see, the 2 light green ones, that wasn't San Juan Batista. Those were short duration events. So the first one had to do with some food preparation that was across from the station that the monitors picked up that day. Second one around July 1st there, it had to do with cutting grass around the station that the station picked up. But once you get around October 1st right there, that spike right there, that was a regional wildfire event from Canadian wildfires. It was like kind of a soup. It was Canadian wildfires mixing with the fires in the Northwest, as well as Northern California. We got smoke impacts from that event. So right around that, behind October 1st through November 1st there, that's the typical pattern we see down in King City with the prevailing winds. That time of year where the sun rises, we get the east winds, the heat rises, the wind starts blowing there. King City is a very interesting place. It's a saddle mountain in the Salinas Valley right there. And as the sun keeps going that way, wind changes direction, starts going the other way. So the wind direction down at that time of the year is like a clock face. It just keeps going around and around. And then the December 1st event right there, that spike, that was another short duration incident. There's some construction work going around our station in King City, and a stockpile of gravel got dumped right next to the station, and the monitor picked it up. So again, we want to show you a 10-year trend just so to illustrate kind of where the air quality is going. So again, in 2020, we had wildfire impacts. We had 3 wildfires going at the same time at that time. We had CZU, Carmel Valley, and Indian Springs. So we had significant impacts around that time. But since then, it's been trending downward again. Okay, so here's the PM2.5. 24-hour concentrations for 2023. And again, our monitors for that picked up the wildfire smoke event in September there. That was that toxic super we talked about. Want to show the trend of that as well. And the 2.5 is more associated with, you pick it up more from wildfire smoke. You do pick up the PM10 as well. But this shows you how the 2016, 2018, 2020 wildfires that hit our region was picked up on our monitors. Since then, it's been slowly going down and it's trending downward. So. Okay, I also want to talk about our smoke sensor net. We established 30 sensors around the area district here. And what these sensors do, it gives us, it's informational, not regulatory information. And it helps us with our smoke management program, you know, whether it's dealing with wildfire smoke or open burning smoke, smoke from home heating. And we use this data to kind of help curtail programs to and pollution forecasting. So we established a map on our website. We enhanced our website with one of the number of things for the public to get piece of information. This was one of the things that we did, is we took our sensor data and established this map. The map is completely interactive. You can click on one of the things there to give you the hourly trends of what was going on there. And we based it off the EPA air quality index. You can see those colors right there. So EPA established this index for the public to easily find out if a criteria is the most healthy or unhealthy. So we utilize that on our website. Between the sensors also helped us establish, along with the data we were getting from our regular monitors, we also established an advisory, wildfire smoke advisory in September. It was picked up by major networks. In fact, KSBW featured it on their weather report during the news. It gave information on how people can protect themselves from wildfire smokes, such as like closing windows, don't go jogging, don't mow grass that day. It also pointed people to our website where they can get the current air quality data as well as other information on wildfire smoke. The sensors also helped us establish a voluntary Spare the Air Day in San Lorenzo Valley in December. The conditions weren't very good at that time. We had high pressure and had a lot of surface smoke. So we established that advisory to kind of let the residents know that impacts were there and that alternative home heating things should be addressed at that time. Overall, I would say, you know, in 2023, you could categorize our air quality as good in the air quality index. You know, foreseeable for 2024, probably continue to be a non-attainment for PM10 due to the prevailing winds down in Kansas City there. But the other factor that we're going to have to deal with, not only us, but as a region and as a country and maybe the world, is the impacts from wildfire smoke. So that's something we're going to probably anticipate for a while. So I'm happy to do my best to answer any questions.
Other questions?
Ozone. I'm seeing more and more both commercial and residential sales of ozone equipment for sanitizing everything from swimming pools, medical equipment. You can get a home one now for dropping your cell phone and whatever you carried out with you, you know, part of the COVID thing. Does that have any impact on the local ozone numbers or is that?
No, that's a great question. I think it all depends on volume of this stuff. If everyone in the county, maybe, but it's hard to know that, right? So it's funny, because remember, long time ago, there's a hole in the ozone layer, right? There's a hole in the ozone layer. You know, ozone at high elevations like that is actually really good. That's good ozone to blast ultraviolet rays, but the surface stuff, that's the pollutant. So to answer your question, I think it all depends on how much of that stuff's being used. Is it really ozone, or is it more of a name thing? I don't know. Yeah, it's hard to know. Good question. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Just to add, some of those are negative ion generators as well. And it's doubtful that they would have an impact because they're very, they scavenge really quickly. So Actually, I'm putting one in my house. In my it's a negative ion. It's not ozone. Ozone is dangerous. California Air Resources Board will not certify ozone ozonators for indoor use. But negative ions, what they do is they attach to particles. So if you have a really dusty house, the particles drop out really quickly. So you may have to vacuum or dust more often. But apparently, once that happens, you're continuously cleaning, and you'll see that the air is much improved indoors. So I'll let you know. If I'm not here next month, something big will happen. But 2 months here. Yeah.
Okay, if there are no other questions.
Just to add to this, is very topical because I just got online, so hot on the press. I got an embargo copy of American Lung Association State of the Air Report, and they grade each county. And so I will give you our phone grades, and you can't tell anybody because it's embargoed, but for ozone, Monterey and Santa Cruz received an A grade. Santa Cruz County received a C letter grade. For PM2.5, we received 3 Fs. And we're a good company, though. I think there were only 3 other counties in California that received anything but an F. I think Yolo Solano and Humboldt received like a C and a B. And there was somebody else that received a D. But so we're not doing well. And it should be also said that the reason we're not exceeding the standards, even though we are on the exception of events or wildfires, is we have to comply to EPA to have those incidents erased. They don't count towards our attainment status, and it's highly controversial now. A lot of folks think that wildfires should count against us. And so what that means, we'd have to step up additional programs to compensate for wildfires, which are essentially acts of nature. So very controversial issues right now going on with the backdrop of the reauthorization of the PM2.5 standards. They're thinking of lowering that. So it's a really critical time. Of course, we're in a election year and all that too, so it's really become very, very complex and complicated.
Given that some of the wildfires are out of the county or out of the district,
or out of the country,
what are we going to do about that?
Build a wall,
declare war, new Canada.
Well, then you have the Supreme Court. Pending decision on administrative, that's scary as heck, which could really affect regulations by the feds. Okay, on that sure note, we need a motion to accept the report.
Motion to accept that.
Okay, it's been moved, seconded to accept the air monitoring report. All in favor say aye.
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 Thank you. Motion carried. Thank you very much.
Appreciate your time. Thank you.
Okay. We are at the point of the oral report from Rich.
Okay. Happy New Year's, everybody. I'll try to catch you up on what transpired the last few months. We've only had 2 board meetings since we last met. One was in October and the other in December. In October, we went over our final BARC rule, which basically told the board there was no further action necessary. We looked at, which is best available, retrofit control technology. It applied to one of our last sources in that category, which was a lime kiln unit with the hoist, it's spelled like. We also had an air toxics program update, which you guys received as well. And we had a presentation and ultimate program approval of our landscape equipment exchange program, which David mentioned. And then we finalized our AB 2766 allocation of $1.3 million to meritorious projects in the district. In December 20th, we had recognitions of staff, and the first was Les Gerard retired, who was our counsel for the past 14 years, and a better man you will not meet, a guy that knows the law better than most attorneys I've ever met. So he was really a bonus for this agency, and it's really sad to see him go.
Who is replacing?
So her name's Kelly Donlin.
Yeah.
So his is one of the county council deputies. Also staff longevity milestones. We do this every year. We recognize milestones for people who have been here. Sandra Hartunian, you may have known her, 35 years with the district, so that's amazing. Trevor Benitez, who's an air quality inspector, 10 years. Carol, our own Carol, who's filling in for Siri today, she clocked in 10 years. And then another inspector, Isael Salazar Rubio, was at 5. And actually, although I won't be recognized until next year, this is my 14th year of agency this month. So, yeah, it's hard to believe things travel, time travels quickly or flies. They also had the, we had the auditor's report to the board. There were no findings. We had a very clean audit. We talked about this is a public retirement system investment strategies. It's in addition to PARs. We've invested for a couple of things, our retirement investments, as well as our post-employment benefits. And we're doing pretty well, but you know, anybody who's following stock market knows it's up and down. So some of the board members wanted to go over what our investment strategies were for those two programs. And then we had an e-bike program, which David mentioned, that changed. We had some problems with the program, and you know, we got conflicting direction from the board, and we thought it was going to be killed, and then they ended up opening it up to everybody and increasing the incentive amount. So as a result, that really drove the drawdown of the incentive amount that we had set aside, which was $50,000. To go on district updates, we were notified about two companies that acquired offshore wind rights off the coast here in Monterey and San Luis Obispo. EPA is interested in us potentially taking over some of the permitting aspects. What that is, we don't know. They're starting out. This is just initial explorations, but it's possible that 20 to 25 miles off the shore, there may be these giant floating windmills producing energy in the not too distant future, probably 10 years or so. So we'll keep you posted if we have anything else coming up on that. On October 13th, this is the first time this happened. Had to go, our agency actually petitioned our own hearings board to write an abatement order against a gas station owner who has failed to obtain a permit to operate. His permit was canceled for failure to pay his fees. In addition, he racked up several $1,000s in penalties. And we've been trying to work with him, but he's sort of blown us off. And we're sort of, we're really good at giving people permits, but we're not good at taking them away. So he's been operating without a permit for several months. So we're looking at additional compliance efforts, because even with the abatement order, which told him to cease and desist from our hearings board, he's continuing to operate. We had a hearing this week. He appealed to the hearing board to have them let him do payments. We did not allow for that in our rules. It sounds like it's a failed business model, and he doesn't have enough to pay for gas, but he's able to keep going. Anyway, so that's been an ongoing dilemma for this agency. On the positive side, we received a settlement check from the Monterey County District Attorney's Office. The check was for $350,000, basically, for violations of asbestos laws during reservation renovations, demolitions, and a senior living community located in Monterey. And Sean is very instrumental in getting this case prosecuted by the district attorney. Us and our own district attorney, but it was a statewide case and actually benefited a number of air districts. We see penalty amounts throughout the state of California. We published our annual rules that we're going to be looking at this next year on our website. David mentioned that we received some money, $202,000 for our AB 617 grant, which is community air protection. And so we're going to be working on the community to get that money spent. This goes to the hearing board. If any of you know, we need an engineer.
Yes.
An engineer and a health
medical professional.
Medical professional, I could be a nurse or a doctor. We've got three members, and I didn't come up with it. Or is it just
we just have three
two? With, yeah. So
we have no more alternates.
Yeah, we're really hurting. So if you know somebody that's willing to volunteer, there is a stipend that they get for attendance.
And the application's online.
Yes, the application's thank you. Another standing item on the board is we received a bunch of other complaints in the last couple of months with regard to Marina. This is an ongoing problem. There's a number of sources that could be contributing to it. We're sort of a clearinghouse for the complaints. We distribute them to the appropriate authorities, which is namely the county ag commissioner and others. But the city of Marina actually conducted an odor study, which was, in our opinion, pretty flawed. And I won't even go over the results because they're sort of meaningless at this point, but it just documented that, yes, there are odors out there, and they're probably coming from one of the five sources they've identified, from the landfill, from the wastewater treatment plant, from agriculture, from a digester's closed, but also a compost rows. David mentioned our electric bicycle program. I said we've changed that, so that should be done within a few short days. Our 2021, going back, the program sort of exists for a while. We've replaced 34 tractors with about $2.25 million, and we've gotten an estimated reduction of 152 tons per year. So what's really nice about this is the cost effectiveness is less than half of the allowable cost effectiveness amount. So it's about $14,000 per ton. Fall is our critical, prescribed fire season. You saw David's chart, which showed all the fires. This is something that, in addition to wildfires, the fire department is really looking to burn 24/7, 365 days a year to manage the fuel in our forests and in our rural areas. So this is going to be a lot of tension with air quality, and a lot of people are really ticked off. We had a fire go really sideways up in Santa Cruz, and our phones lit up, like, how can we do such a thing? And, you know, the ultimate comparison is, would you rather have a wildfire, or would you rather have a scrap fire? But anyway, so there's a good article that I wrote on our online newsletter, if you want to read more about that. We're working with a nonprofit, Living Better Lives, a potential e-bike loan program for low-income communities. What we've decided is that we're really bad at giving out money to the general public. We are not set up for that. We had a guy come into our garage and empty his car in our garage, and he wouldn't leave until we gave him his, which was sort of dubious. He wanted his incentive for a bike he purchased a couple years back. It was crazy, and he may have some issues there. But we're just not set up to deal with the general public. So we'd rather work with nonprofits or other governmental entities to distribute that type of money. And then just to mention, landscape equipment program, we've got some numbers which will need to be updated, but we've got basically $315,000 in project funds, and we split that with the residential and commercial, $80,000 going to the residential program. There have been 30 applications as the date that this was prepared. I'm sure there are more now. Total applications, 27 residential, 3 commercial so far. I'm sure that's increased a lot, you guys. Yeah, they're shaking their head. Yeah, probably. Okay, sorry to throw that at you. So the average residential rebate is about $490, and the average commercial rebate is around $4,000. Our Spare the Air program began on November 3rd up in San Lorenzo Valley. This is when we sort of piggyback on the Bay Area's Fair of the Air, which up there is mandatory. Here it's voluntary. So people get confused, and that's okay, because sometimes they think they have to do switch to no wood burning during impaired air quality events, such as inversions. We did have one Spare the Air alert called on December 13th. It was lifted on December 16th. And then we have our wood stove change-up program, which just started. We actually got additionals like $300,000, so we're like $500,000, almost $600,000. So the only reason we got it doubled enough is because we were able to cover that money so that we didn't have to give it back to the state, because they're looking to call all the money, grant monies, back to CARB to give back to the state. So we were able to get that money, because if we waited for next year, it was probably unlikely they would get the money. And then just a few things on our community outreach highlights. We've, as I mentioned, Spare the Air, Lawn Landscape, all these have done. We've issued alerts or notifications online and to the news media and public, and in English and Spanish. And so you can look online to see all these, the work that primarily Siri is doing. And as I said, our newsletter is available, our most recent one, which is January. And then I think that concludes my report. And if anybody has any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Any questions? Thank you, Rich. Any future agenda items? Seeing none, I have no comments. Just thank you for electing me for another year. comments from committee members?
Thank you for re-electing me for no.
So, seeing no other comments, the meeting's adjourned. Well, it's
yeah, I'm getting
yeah.